This podcast is provided by New St. Andrews College. For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu or come see us here in Moscow, Idaho for one of our prospective student weekends, September 21st and 22nd and October 26th and 27th. For more information about the college or prospective student weekends, visit us online at nsa.edu.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast. My name is Ben Merkel. I'm the president of New St. Andrews College. Today I am joined by fellow of music, Dr. David Honky Tonk Erb. David, thank you very much for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
So David, NSA is a little bit unique in that, well, there's a number of ways we're unique, but one of the things that sets us apart is the fact that we require all of our students to do a full year of music, no matter what they're wanting to focus on. Everybody has to do a year of music. So can you tell me, why is music a required part of the curriculum at New St. Andrews?
Sure. Well, it wasn't too long ago, I just found out from you that apparently music started because they had a philosophy class that went bad or something, and music replaced it.
Well, yeah, it used to be we had philosophy. Everybody did a year of philosophy, and we found that there was something wonky that was happening, and we replaced the year of philosophy with the year of music, and it's at the freshman level. Eventually, philosophy came back, so now there's a significant chunk of philosophy, but I think it's more rooted in the rest of the curriculum in a more healthy way now.
Yeah. But so as we do it now, yeah, it's required. We do it during the freshman year, which is wonderful because we sing so much at NSA and in our church community here. It's nice to get that as a foundation. But why we do it is if we're a classical and a Christian college. And so as we look historically at those two streams, we find this is kind of fundamental to being a Christian and actually fundamental in a classical mindset. So first, just Christianly, while I haven't done a number study on this, I think it's possible that the imperative, the command, the call to sing for God's people is at the top of the list. There's very little that's commanded as much as sing to the Lord. So there's just that. There's the call to it. But as we go through Scripture, we see to sing to the Lord, to sing to one another, to sing to the ends of the earth as one of the ways that we're to proclaim the word. But in Colossians 3:16, it says that we are to teach and admonish one another, which everyone says, yeah, we're supposed to do that. But the clause that follows it is in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. There's a means in which we're to have the word dwelling in us richly. There's a means by which we're supposed to teach and admonish one another, and it's in the Psalter. Biblically, there's this call. We also just, as you survey it from a different perspective, and what you see in Scripture, and you see it too in history, but God's people are a singing people. The first thing that happens when the very central Old Testament event of the crossing of the Red Sea, the deliverance, is they sing. It's the first thing they do to mark that. We read in Job that when God created the world, the morning stars, the angels were singing. When Jesus was born, the angels sing. When Mary finds out she's pregnant with Jesus and she sings the Magnificat, Song of Simeon, Paul and Silas in prison, we just see God's people singing all the time. We see it in Revelation. The whole description of before the throne of God that John sees or Isaiah saw was singing without ceasing before the throne. So, as Christians, it's really hard to escape that singing is just central to who we are. Classically, when you go back and you read Plato and Aristotle, teachings of Pythagoras and different things as they flesh out, there's a similar foundation with music. As they saw, studied kind of the universe, they had this mathematical approach, and of course, eventually there's this the quadrivium that gets put forward, study of number in four different ways, and one of them is music. But you read in the writings of Plato that music was foundational in the formation of the soul, the character of a person, and by extension, a people. So they thought that there was a need for oversight, at least philosophically. They said there's a need for oversight of music because if your music goes bad, the social, political foundations of your society will crumble. I think it was Plato that said, let me write the songs of a people, and I don't care who writes its laws. The power that music had over people, and that's portrayed. The story that goes with that is the story of Orpheus. Orpheus had this incredible power with his music that he could affect other people. He uses it as he goes down in the underworld to try to rescue his wife, even over inanimate objects. And we have a biblical parallel to that, and that's the story of David and Saul. Of course, it's through God's working and through his spirit, but as David played the harp, it would soothe the soul mm-hmm. of Saul. And then he went bad, and he'd come back, and he'd play his harp. And there's this musical power, if you will.
Right.
We don't know how that works, but
and it does seem like it's a pretty striking thing when you think about the lack of, you know, in most of the evangelical church, we don't really have a singing church. We might have a performing church,
mm-hmm.
but congregational singing, robust congregational singing, or music that would spill over into, you know, your drive to work or your Friday night with your friends. Music that would spill into those. We don't have Christian music that really occupies that space that it once did.
Right. So I think a large reason for that at this point is a lack of musical literacy.
Mm-hmm.
Our experience with music is simply what we hear on the radio or mm-hmm. wherever we listen to it nowadays. But we don't actually do music, and what we do, we only do secondhand. I heard this on a recording and I can sing along now, mm-hmm. but I couldn't read it if you showed it to me, or I couldn't tell you that's that song
right.
if the words weren't there, just by the music. There have been different times and in different places where it's been more normative to be musically literate as a society.
Mm-hmm.
In early American history, it's a wonderful note that the first book published in America was a Psalter.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have the music with it. It was the words that you could sing to tunes you knew that fit. The Bay Psalter is what it was called. But as they start publishing hymn books later on, in the beginning of the hymn book was a music theory text.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they were going to teach people how to read music because you had a book that had music in it. It's not enough to just know words
mm-hmm.
or to know the tune, but you read it. And the music had multiple parts. And so it became normative in at least some places to sing parts. So you had to teach people. Early American church was known to have singing schools. So regularly, say on a Wednesday evening, people would get together and they'd learn the rudiments of music and they'd learn how to read the music. And once you learn to read the music, you can do anything you want and you're not dependent on a recording to play along. And of course, back then there was no recording. If you wanted music, you had to do it. It's kind of one of the blessings and curses of technology is all of a sudden we don't know how to do music ourselves as a people because we can just press play. Many of us don't know how to cook because we can just hit the microwave button. So that's the thrust of the freshman music class is musical literacy. We survey Western classical music, and we look at it from various angles. One is just music history. Part of literacy is knowing the literature, not just the ability to read and write, but knowing Shakespeare, knowing different authors, in this case, knowing Bach and Praetorius and others. So we look at it from a music history side. We'll read about it. We listen to music, so we start to become familiar with the works because so many people nowadays just don't know the most basic standard works of art musically from in a classical realm. We look at music theory, the nuts and bolts. This is an A, this is a quarter note, so we can decipher the notation. And then oral skills also. We can analyze what we hear and name it, and those come together so that we can actually read the music. And then lastly, we spend some time on vocal technique. They either take a voice class or they're in choir. So it's not that they just can process the information, but they can actually sing well, because that's at the end of the day, we're supposed to sing unto the Lord, not just know the information on the music page. And so we want them to grow in that. It's really common for a lot of freshmen to come to NSA having little to no musical experience. They don't read music.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I have, because I do think it is an intimidating thing for a student. I can imagine myself as a 17 or 18-year-old boy. No, I can imagine myself currently as a 45-year-old man being told I'm going to have to go through a one-year music class that begins with, I might add, having to go and by yourself stand in Dr. Erb's office and do a little solo for him. Mm-hmm. I might pull off a mean happy birthday. So a kid who's coming with zero or perhaps even negative musical training in his life, can a kid like that make it at NSA, make it through your course? What are they going to get other than perhaps humiliated, brought to tears, or is there hope for them?
Yeah, well, tears do happen sometimes. Yeah, I just actually recently had a student, a freshman, so we've only been in, we're in week four now, say, I was so scared of music. It was one of those things that made me not sure I wanted to come to NSA because I was going to have to do music. And already they're just loving it, the growth. For many students, music is the hardest class they have as a freshman because they don't have a background. You know, all students have had some foreign language or they've studied scripture before. Their other class areas are familiar, at least. Music, it can be not the case, but generally speaking, by the end of the year, anyone who's put in the time, worked hard at it, gets where they're reading music. They may not be great at it, but they can do it. Similarly, I'll have students come every year that aren't even matching pitch. They can't do it. And I found that any student who works at it, and they might need to get extra help because they're so far behind, will get it. I had a student who wasn't matching pitch at all when they came. And 4 years later, they sang in the choir and did the whole Messiah and sang in the church choir. And in other cases like that, where I've had students actually come to the incoming freshman class, they started out, couldn't read music, couldn't match pitch, and they sang a solo in front of the freshmen saying, yeah, you can do this. It's not, I think a lot of times with music, we think it's like some kind of a mystery language, mystery religion. You know, if you had pixie dust sprinkled on you when you were born, you're gifted in it. But we don't talk that way with other things as much. Oh, you're really, God gifts in all areas to be sure. But we don't think that all of a sudden as a people, we're gifted in being able to read English. But 500 years ago, most people didn't read their native language unless you were the aristocracy. And now everybody does it. You're not gifted in English, or everybody can write a poem. Even if it's not good, you can write it. Mm-hmm. And it's no different with music. It just needs the time.
And it's interesting just watching the impact that's had on the community, because now having had that in the student body for long enough where we actually have an entire student body plus a surrounding community of alumni, graduates, and whatnot that have been trained that way, and seeing the place that song starts to have and in their Sunday morning worship, also in their, I just think it's interesting when you see a group of students together on a Friday night and the Psalters come out, and that's a part of enjoying one another is mm-hmm. singing psalms together, because it's actually just a lot of fun. And then seeing the place, the role that has in a lifelong sort of commitment to Christ, because I think as you're quoting from those Plato quotes earlier, there is something really compelling about song. Like when you actually can really have a music that you enjoy that points you to Christ, it does help to actually anchor you for lifelong faithfulness. I mean, it's just really an impressive impact that it has. So how about, that's the freshman music class, which is kind of the core of our music program, is getting those freshmen basically musically literate. But there are a number of other things that you're up to at NSA that go well beyond what's happening there at the freshman level. Can you describe some of the other pieces that you have in play?
Yeah, so just last year we started a certificate in music program, and it allows students who see themselves as maybe wanting to be active in music, either as a teacher or a helper down the road, to have some more opportunities to grow in it. Prior to last year, we've hardly ever had any further electives in music, just the freshman class. So in essence, someone in the program, if they are admitted into it, one of their electives each year would be in music. So They have their freshman music class, which they'll take as an honors version of it, a little bit more challenging. Their sophomore year, they take a musicianship two, where they're doing more advanced theory and history and oral skills. They'll have a year of form and analysis, and then their fourth year would be composing and arranging. And then additionally, that's all within an NSA degree, so it's really no different than another student. Other students might take more language or more literature. But on top of that, they take private lessons on both a primary and a secondary instrument or voice. It's a full load for them, but we're in our second year, and it's really going well. The students are really enjoying it and growing, and enjoying having the opportunity to start to interact as musicians, where before that didn't happen as much. There's kind of a general growth in the body, but this is allowing some to go further, like we've seen in other areas of study that we do at NSA.
It's bringing in a few more performances each year. We have a guest coming here shortly. Is it Gilbert de Grieve?
Yeah, Belgian pianist. And that's, it's actually tied to another thing we're doing, where we've started a summer training course for music teachers. I'll talk about in a minute. But Gilbert de Grieve from Belgium was a former president of the International Kodai organization. And so he knows everybody in that world, not everybody, but a lot. And one of the gentlemen we brought in to be our master teacher for our summer session was good friends with him. And Gilbert happened to be in Seattle doing a concert tour. And so he just kind of took a detour from Seattle to Moscow on his way to Salt Lake City to see his friend. And so we got to meet him. And this is the second year now he's coming out to do a solo piano recital for us. So it's been a wonderful thing that's given birth to an artist series, a concert series that we're doing. And we're looking to grow that as we grow. So that summer session, it's called Chenanaya Summer Music Institute. Chenanaya was the chief musical Levite who was over all the other musical Levites because he was skillful, scripture says. And so we've named it for him. And we teach the Kodai methodology. Kodai was a Hungarian music composer, music educator, and took tools of music that had been around for a long time, arranged them in such a way to teach music as a language and not a subject. Can't go into all the details now, but it's rooted in singing, which differentiates it primarily from all other methods. And so it's primarily a K-6 kind of method, getting people prepared to then walk into mature music, to be able to read, become literate. The story in Hungary is eventually he was able to start his ideas in one school, and then when they had trained a teacher fully, they put it in another school. Well, within about a generation, Hungary went from being an illiterate country to a country in which if you weren't musically literate, and I mean the ability to play an instrument, read music like you read your native tongue, you were not considered a literate citizen. There was just this huge growth culturally, and that ties in with what we're trying to do here as we're trying to change culture. We want to grow up a musically literate people, and so we're trying to do it in such a way that it'll hopefully have that kind of an effect, at least within the church first, mm-hmm. and then throughout.
So you've got the Certificate of Music Program, the Chenanaya Teacher Training Program. What else are you working on?
This last summer, we launched a high school honor choir in tandem with the Association of Classical Christian Schools summer conference. Mm-hmm. So we had 70 to 80 students accepted, and we met in Frisco, Dallas area, a little before the conference started, and rehearsed for about 4 days, 3 to 4 days, and then put on a concert for the conference at the end. And it was a wonderful experience for the students. For most of them,
it almost killed the leadership, but it was it was a wonderful time for the students.
Yeah, so we had some growing pains, but hearing from students afterwards, you know, some of them, that was one of the most important experiences of my life, or I never knew I could like something that was so hard. And for many of them, they come from very small music programs, and maybe they rehearse 2 or 3 times a week for 45 minutes or something. Well, our first rehearsal was 1 hour and 45 minutes, and it was 1 of 3 rehearsals. And then we had other sectional kinds of things. I mean, it was like football, boot camp, you know, whatever, but with music. And most of them weren't used to this kind of intensity with music. And this, and in many cases, this level of music, difficult classical stuff. But they did great with it and put on a wonderful concert at the end. And it was, so the experience is twofold. One, to give opportunity for some students who are more advanced in the ACCS world, but also to serve as a model for ACCS programs. So I think the encouragement was to music teachers who are at the concert and headmasters who are there, school board members, like, wow, yeah, we need to be maybe looking at growing in that direction. Mm-hmm. So it was successful on that front.
Yeah, I was in the audience for it. It was really an impressive display. And quite a good concert. I believe there's even a recording of it, possibly on the NSA webpage.
I think so.
And music camp?
Yeah. Lastly, this is something that I put on a music camp every summer. It's a K-12 classical Christian sacred music camp. Also, a lot of Bible. The kids do Bible study. I often say it's VBS, maybe as it ought to be done, not with mm-hmm. all of the cute bells and whistles, but it's real stuff, right. Real study. And we do a concert at the end. Again, it's hard work, but the students love it. I've been doing it for the last 16 years, 6 years in the Seattle area when I was working there, and then the 10 years I've been here. Also started one up in Louisiana with a colleague of mine, Donna Monroe. And it's been generally speaking, more of a local thing for the youth here, but we do have people coming from outside of the state, even outside of the country in some cases, and they have a connection here, and they want to come and get an opportunity for their students to have an experience that maybe they don't get in their home.
I have started noticing families that are basically their summer vacation, family vacation, is coming to Moscow, putting their kids through music camp. And we have during music camp and immediately after music camp, there's a bunch of other different activities going on. So it makes a surprisingly exciting time here in Moscow in the summers.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, thanks very much, David. I know we've got more to talk about next week, but thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm a 2009 graduate of New St. Andrews College, and I'm a commercial property manager.
3 kids at Logos, 1 at home still, and I do flowers on the side out of our house. When you have these little people that you're responsible to shepherd, you realize I need to know what I'm talking about, because they need to have a firm foundation and they need deep roots so that they don't get blown over and that they're ready to stand up for the truth.
I am a programmer. The language aspect of NSA is a fantastic preparation for any sort of programming.
I'm a real estate broker here in town. I think absolutely the perfect education for being in sales of really any kind.
I actually put it to a lot of great use when I was working in the political realm.
I am a pastor in Central Coast, California. Whatever vocation you take, it'll make you take that seriously because you're seeing it through the lens of the sovereignty and lordship of Christ.
For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu.